coming up on KUCB News. The polls are open for Election Day, and a body found yesterday has been tentatively identified as a missing Unalaska man. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics. Located in the airport cargo building, Redfish sells computers, Androids, iPhones, iPads, televisions, headphones, and unlocked phones. Business hours can be obtained by calling 359-2205.
Redfish, we got stuff.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on this Election Day, Tuesday, November 6th, 2018. A body recovered yesterday has been tentatively identified as that of Willie Robinson, an Unalaska resident who went missing in early October while fishing in Captain's Bay. A boater found the deceased man's body in the waters near the old herring saltery at the base of Haystack Hill. That's according to Acting Police Chief Jennifer Shockley. She says, quote, "The body was badly decomposed, but family members have tentatively identified it based on known health conditions," end quote. Shockley says definitive identification won't be made until the state medical examiner performs a forensic examination. Last month, she said the exact circumstances of Robinson's disappearance were a mystery, though police said it likely stemmed from an incident in the waters of Captain's Bay. Investigators who searched the island where he was fishing found no signs of foul play or an emergency on land. Robinson's disappearance sparked extensive searches by his family and friends and more than a dozen community volunteers who continued looking for him after the police and the U.S. Coast Guard had suspended their searches. A car accident this morning briefly closed East Broadway Avenue and left two Unalaska teenagers with non-life-threatening injuries. Acting Chief Shockley says icy road conditions were a factor in the one-car wreck near the city's Department of Public Works. Driving speed may have been a factor as well, though Shockley declined to specify how fast the car was moving, as police are still investigating. She did say one teen was driving while the other rode as passenger. Shockley is now reminding Unalaskans to drive cautiously, especially as winter weather brings challenging road conditions. It's Election Day, and voting is underway at Unalaska City Hall. The ballot is asking Southwest Alaska voters to decide who will represent them in the State House for the next 2 years. Yesterday, we heard from political newcomer William Weatherby. The King Salmon Republican favors a full permanent fund dividend and no new taxes. To make that happen, he says the legislature should work with state departments to cut spending, though he declined to name specific programs that he would consider for the chopping block. Today, we'll hear from Weatherby's opponent, Democrat Bryce Edgman of Dillingham, who is running for his sixth term in Juneau. KUCB spoke with the incumbent about how he would approach Alaska's budget gap if reelected.
My focus, again, will be on protecting those services that are in place now. And I do believe we have cut the budget by and large to a point where additional cuts are going to essentially just remove wholesale programs and services that what little we get out here in rural Alaska, we heavily depend upon.
And so if you're against further cuts, does that mean you still think Alaska should be considering a broad-based tax to fill that hole in the budget?
I don't think anybody really could deny at some point we're probably going to have to need some level of new revenues. And I think the citizenry in the state will probably at some point be asked to contribute very modest amounts. And what that might be, what shape it may take, it's not known at this point. But all politics of statewide elections aside, I think that's a responsible approach to take.
Your opponent, however, is against new taxes. He's also campaigning on a promise to restore a full permanent fund dividend, and he's against a bill that was passed last session that has allowed for earnings from the permanent fund to help pay for state governments, all things that run counter to your budget philosophy. So what do you think of William Weatherby and his platform? He's arguing that, you know, you've had your turn in the legislature and having some fresh blood could help.
Well, you know, on my own behalf, I would say that experience plays greatly in the effectiveness of a rural legislator in particular. Rural legislators in Juneau are in a minority, and having years of experience and also years of seniority and a deep and sort of intimate understanding of all the issues and, you know, years of building up goodwill and strong relationships with members from both of the major parties is a real asset to our district. Mr. Weatherby, I have encountered him a couple of times, sort of in passing. I know he's never been to Juneau. He's never held elected office. And I'm not quite sure what his background is that would make him qualified to be a legislator. And, you know, the issue of a full dividend, I support a full dividend. I've actually, the last couple of years, voted for a full dividend in terms of being able to be more of a short-term benefit, all the while knowing that in the long term, with the stock market expected to have a downturn or a correction, that it would be very difficult to sustain a full dividend in the face of oil prices where they're at today and what we're spending. You know, I think once you present these trade-offs to people, most people will understand and will accept the reality that we're in, and that, you know, we'd all like to have a full PFD. I would myself, but in the end, we have to make a little bit of a sacrifice to make it work.
That was Bryce Edgman of Dillingham, the Democrat running for re-election at Alaska House District 37, which includes Unalaska and the Aleutian Islands. Edgman's opponent is King Salmon Republican William Weatherby, whose interview we aired yesterday. You can find the interviews of both candidates online at KUCB.org. Meanwhile, Southwest Alaska's other legislator, Lyman Hoffman, is running unopposed for re-election at Senate District S. Hoffman is a Bethel Democrat campaigning on an effort to protect rural programs while lawmakers continue working on a balanced budget. Moving out of the region and into statewide races, Alaskans are casting votes on Ballot Measure 1, the controversial initiative aimed at protecting the state's salmon habitat. Companies behind big mines and oil developments have helped raise millions to campaign against the initiative, arguing that it will hinder a host of projects. But supporters say it was specifically designed to allow for vital infrastructure. So how will the measure affect mid-sized projects used by everyday Alaskans? As Elizabeth Harbaugh reports for Alaska's Energy Desk, the answer isn't so clear-cut.
Part of the uncertainty on how the Salmon Habitat Initiative could affect things like small-scale hydro projects or mom-and-pop placer mines hinges on a single phrase in the ballot measure: significant adverse effects. That's because if it passes, projects that could cause significant adverse effects to salmon habitat will go through a much tougher and more public vetting process to get what's called a major permit. So what counts as a significant adverse effect on salmon? And where's the line between a major permit and a minor permit?
We have not made an actual determination about that yet.
That's Ron Bankert, a regional supervisor with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, the agency that would carry out the ballot measure. Bankert says the measure does lay out some clear definitions, like if a project blocks fish from passing through, that's significant. Other criteria on what counts as significant are less clear, he says.
Some of them are kind of difficult to define, and it would probably require us to develop some additional regulations to further clarify that.
So if the measure passes, that's not the end of the story. Although it will go into effect 90 days after the election results are final, the state will probably end up writing regulations. And those regulations would try to nail down the distinction between projects in salmon habitat that have to clear a higher bar and projects that won't. Eric Felstead is an attorney with Perkins Coie, a firm that has worked for companies opposing the ballot measure and the campaign against it. Felstead says if the salmon habitat measure passes, Fish and Game will be under intense scrutiny as it goes about figuring out what counts as significant adverse effects on fish habitat.
You know, I've been involved in a lot of rulemakings over the years. This one's going to be as hard as anything I've ever seen, just because there's so much interest in it.
Little projects like boat ramps, the state can probably safely put projects like that under the minor category. And a big proposed mine that will displace salmon streams? That'll definitely go through the tougher permitting process. But Felstead says there's some gray area in the middle, and he thinks that will be tricky for Fish and Game to navigate.
You know, you have, say, a road that's 75 yards long with a gravel pad where you want to build a cabin, and it's through kind of a swampy area that is deemed to be anadromous fish habitat. You know, is that going to be under the minor scheme? I think those are the questions that are harder, that are kind of right on the line.
Emily Anderson, an attorney with the Wild Salmon Center who helped write the initiative, pushed back on opponents who say needed infrastructure projects will be hindered by the ballot measure. She says she trusts Fish and Game to not write overly burdensome regulations.
It's really, really premature to say you'll never be able to do this or expand your airport in X, Y, and Z community. That's ridiculous to say that at this point.
Anderson acknowledges it's hard to pinpoint exactly what projects will get a minor permit and what projects will go through the tougher vetting process. But she adds it's not about how big or small a project is or what kind of project it is. The measure was written so it's all about how much it affects salmon habitat.
You can have a very large project that has very little impact to fish habitat and therefore can be processed as a minor permit. You can have a very small project that the way it's being proposed can have very high impacts to fish habitat and that may be proposed as a major project.
So a project's size may not be the best indicator of how much it could be impacted by ballot measure one. And even then, when it comes to how the initiative could impact some projects used by everyday Alaskans, a lot rides on how the state writes the regulations to implement it. But before all that, Alaskans will vote to decide whether the ballot measure should go forward at all. For Alaska's Energy Desk, I'm Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage.
Voters today will also be confronted with a list of judges that they probably never heard of. KBBI's Aaron Bolton has more on the judicial races, including one that's gained a high profile thanks to the judge's ruling in an assault case.
Alaska is one of 20 states where judges have to run for retention. That's according to the National Center for State Courts, and the center says Alaska is also one of four states that provide state-sanctioned evaluations.
Alaska was the first state to really mandate evaluation of judges standing for retention, and the council's been doing this since 1976.
Suzanne DiPietro is executive director of the Alaska Judicial Council, which runs the process. It interviews judges, holds public hearings, evaluates how well their rulings hold up in appeal, and then the council scores judges from 1 to 5. None of this is very exciting, but a recent decision by Anchorage Superior Court Judge Michael Corey has galvanized an organized campaign to throw him off the bench. That's because Corey sentenced an Anchorage man named Justin Schneider to probation. Schneider pled guilty to second-degree assault in a case that many viewed as premeditated sexual assault. Voters from Talkeetna to Homer will vote whether to retain Corey on Tuesday.
I don't think I would have started this campaign if Schneider had even gotten 6 months. Would I think that's woefully inadequate? Yes, but I probably wouldn't be, like, you know, taking to the streets in the way that I have.
Elizabeth Williams is a social worker who's campaigning to have Judge Corey removed. What's vexing for some of the judge's critics is Corey's evaluation doesn't take this controversial ruling into account. That's because it was completed before Corey issued the decision. And even so, DiPietro said it might have not had much of a bearing on the council's recommendation to retain him.
We're looking at the judge's entire performance, and on a controversial case, it is, you know, the question is not, you know, do I personally agree with that decision or like that decision? The question is, was the decision legally correct?
Williams is aware of the system. She used to perform research work for the Judicial Council while working for the University of Alaska Anchorage. She knows both its strengths and shortcomings.
That's what the Alaska Judicial Council is good at, is going over their entire record, and I fully respect that, but I think there are some cases that are so egregious that we need to put more weight on that, you know?
Some in the legal community say the controversy surrounding the Corey ruling gets people, much like Williams, to focus on the judicial system.
Yeah, when there's controversy, people look, and I'm an optimistic person, I think people learn.
Elaine Andrews has been there. She's a former Superior Court judge who says the law has dictated some of her unpopular rulings while on the bench. And she cautions people not to let one controversial ruling shade their judgment.
I mean, I certainly have had cases where I know the public is going to be extremely unhappy. And in fact, I'm personally unhappy about the decision I need to render.
There are 15 judges up for retention in Alaska's 1st, 3rd, and 4th judicial districts. The full list and their bios is on the Alaska Judicial Council's website. A summary of each judge's evaluation score can also be found in the voter's pamphlet. Reporting in Homer, I'm Aaron Bolton.
Once again, the polls are open until 8 o'clock tonight, so don't forget to vote. And if you need a refresher on which forms of ID are acceptable, what's on the ballot, and other voting basics, check out our election guide online at kucb.org. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.